Hello, welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll be speaking to Graham Massey, once of 808 State, and now playing drums for an all-girl synth group. We'll have new music from Animal Collective, Laura Marling, and Effed Up. I'll say the name probably later on. We'll have the best of your face back. But first, De Grazia, Regina Spectre.
You went into the kitchen cupboard, got yourself another hour, and you gave half of it to me. We sat there looking at the faces of the strangers in the pages till we knew mathematically they were in our minds until forever.
That's a little bit of Latin there. You'll find it on a twopence piece. To introduce our first guest this week, Regina Spectre. Rosie Swash joins me here. How are you, Rosie?
I love the fact that you continue to insist on calling her Regina.
Why?
Because
it's Regina. Regina. Regina, it's kind of makes it sound more kind of like more family.
Vagina.
Well, that isn't where I was coming from. I was coming from kind of regal and actually, you know, looking up to people and respecting them nowadays, unlike the youth of today, which you are a representative of.
No way, I'm too old for that. Swash. Now.
Anyway, you spoke to Regina Spectre, and what I would like you to kind of delineate, first of all, is quite why we want to speak to her. What's interesting about Regina?
What's interesting about Regina? I would say she's the kind of queen of the so-called anti-folk scene. And I think that, I mean, she was born in Russia, and she's New York-based now, Jewish. I think that comes across very much in the sort of kitscheness and real unusualness of her music. And she's got a kind of kitsch strung outness to her personality, which I think comes across. Her last album, her fourth album, Begin to Hope, did really well, which is quite unexpected, I think, which shows that she has pop sensibility. And her fifth album, Far, which is out earlier this year, was really quite different. It was a lot grander in its themes, much less personal, quite inquisitive in general. And so true to her nature, also on the album, she employs a lot of unusual sounds with her vocals. So I spoke to her recently when she was in the UK, and I asked her to talk about the way she uses her vocals in unusual ways and whether there were special things that she did to make sure her vocal range doesn't stay in normal places.
Well, just finding music in your home, just finding like a cool bowl, and as you're moving it, you're just like, wow, this thing actually really sounds good. Where you clink something together, and it's just, I think instruments are, we're sort of surrounded by them. And I think the voice is an extension of that, definitely, because our body, it's like, we could make so many sounds. I mean, we just hear it in the amount of languages and how people pronounce things in different countries. And, you listen to Chinese and then Russian and then French, and German, and it just sounds so different. Like people are making completely different noises out of the same instrument. And when they try to learn the other person's language, they have a heavy accent. I think that something happens when you want to make produced music, because I heard a lot of instruments, for my songs. I didn't just hear just piano, and you hear all this like, drums and trumpets and things, but you only have a piano and a voice. So then you start kind of trying to imply certain things. So maybe some rhythms could be implied with your voice, or mouth drumming, or, like other parts. You just try to kind of stretch a little, because it's like I was making music for so long before I ever had the chance to step into a studio.
Spend half your life trying to fall behind. You're easing your headphones to drown out your mind. It was so easy, and the words so sweet. You can't remember. You try to move.
Said in an interview before, more than once, you've talked about really liking hip hop and beats and the importance of that side, which totally makes sense, I think, to anyone that knows your music. And also what we were talking about before, in terms of interesting sounds. But I just wondered if there was any sort of, I don't know, any particular albums or artists in the realm of hip hop who you felt influenced by.
Of hip hop, I definitely really loved Public Enemy, and I just, you know, I love. I don't like the whole like bitches and hoes thing so much, you know. Like, I like it as a novelty sometimes, you know. It's like, I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. It's like, it's a cool song, but like, as far as like lyrics, a lot of the time I'm not really into the whole like big guys with their big screen TVs. Like, I don't really feel like it challenges my mind in any way. You know, I like smart hip hop, you know, or like at least clever. Just like fun, not taking itself too seriously. So like Beastie Boys, definitely Slick Rick, he's amazing. And Eminem, definitely, you know, Dre. I like early Snoop Dogg, not the recent stuff. The recent stuff is just him saying that he's Snoop Dogg.
Once lived in London. Is this true? You lived in,
yes,
in
it is, for half a year in Tottenham.
Now, I know that people that are listen to this show and are not from London, that might not mean anything other than, say, the football club. But I live quite near to Tottenham, but I would never live in Tottenham out of choice, because I don't think it's a very nice part of the world. How did you find living there? Sorry if I'm offending
people. I totally loved it. You know, I absolutely loved it.
Really?
You know, you kind of get this picture, you know, this romantic picture of England, and to me, London, I don't know, I think I pictured London like a combination of those, like, movies where the guys row the sculling or whatever. I pictured it more like Oxford, I think, you know, and it just is like pretty boys and girls in their London fog coats, like, learning, you know, Shakespeare. It just was like very romantic.
And then I went to Tottenham,
exactly. And I have to say that, like, we came kind of like a whole bunch of Americans to study there, and everybody was a little bit freaked out. But to me, it actually, Tottenham is a lot like the Bronx. And I felt totally at home. I didn't like all the stabbing stuff that was going on, you know. Like, every day you'd get out of the tube and it would be like, there's been another stabbing on White Hart Lane, and like, any suspect like should be, you know, if you've seen anything, like, I'd be like, fuck, man. You know, like, I don't like that. I think in New York, there's people just go straight for the gun, maybe. You know, like, there's not a lot of stabbings going on. But besides reading it, I felt awesome there, you know. I loved going and getting my little, what's that awesome store that has the giant catalogs where you could get like little speakers?
Oh, Argos,
yes. I loved that place. You could just get like, you could spend 2 hours looking through a catalog and be very confused and get yourself some tiny electronic thing, and it's the wrong thing. But
we like to call it the laminated book of dreams.
Yes. Yes, exactly. The laminated book of dreams. I love that.
He took a step, but then felt tired. He said, I'll rest a little while. But when he tried to walk again, he wasn't a child. And all the people hurried fast, real fast, and no one ever smiled.
It occurred to me when listening to the album that Far is about, maybe about looking at things from a different perspective than you normally would, or than you have done in your songs previously, maybe about distancing yourself from the subject matter to a certain degree. Like, I guess I'm thinking of Laughing and the sort of observer's perspective you have on God and religion. Was that, you know, was there an intention to sort of put yourself in that position when you started writing the album?
I don't really write albums, you know. I just write songs, and then I end up picking the album out of whatever 60 songs that are overdue to be recorded in some way or another. But the songs that happened kind of to fall together on this record, they definitely have that feeling. Yeah, when I was sequencing it, I all of a sudden started noticing all these things, like what you said, like the different perspectives and the kind of looking at the same thing, you know, 10 different ways, drawing some conclusions, but not really. I don't know. I guess I'm asking questions more. Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. I was sort of left with like, wow, well, you know, what do even I believe, you know? And I think on different days I believe different things, and it's sort of just this malleable thing to me.
That was Regina Spektor, and the album Far is out now on London Records. Next on my script, it reads, Rebecca Nicholson, Singles Club, How Are You, Start With, etc. How does that grab you, Rebecca?
That sort of makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's kind of what we usually do. We have a little bit of an introductory period before we go and review, but I try and like make it specific to each person. I don't, you know, it's usually less generic than that.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask you about your life as a glamorous rock critic. Have you been seeing any good... Because now's the time where people start record companies... as we noticed on our Ellie Goulding thread the other week, record companies start seeding acts for 2010. Are, yes. Are there any bands you've seen of late that you're looking forward to seeing again?
I do like Frankie and the Heartstrings, and I haven't really seen them on many lists, and I sort of thought they might get a little bit more hype than they have.
Did they not make the BBC shortlist? I think they might have made the
Did
10.
They make yeah, it
or
all
the long list, rather.
Yeah, or maybe it was on the long list, yeah. I liked them very much. I saw them supporting Florence and the Machine a while back and thought they were... Oh, actually, no, I didn't. I saw them... It all blurs into one. I saw them
so
at the
bar. So many gigs, so little time.
So many gigs, so little time.
Well, that'll do, though. That's a band.
I like them a lot.
Frankie and the Heartstrings.
And their keyboardist is Johnny X from Kinnicky. But now he is going by the less exciting Pete Gofton.
Blimey. Yep. So what, Lauren Laverne's Kinnicky?
Lauren Laverne's Kinnicky.
Wow.
He is her brother. Indie facts.
Fact.
Okay,
that's enough. That's enough small talk to cue us up for some music. We'll start with Laura Marling, and this is Goodbye England, brackets, Covered in Snow, close brackets.
And I bet you that he cracked a smile, and I'm clearing all the crap out of my room, trying desperately to figure out what it is that makes me blue. And I wrote an epic letter to you, and it's 22 pages front and back, but it's too good to be used. And I try to be a girl who likes to be used. I'm too good for that. There's a mind under this hat, and I called them all and told them I've got to move.
That was Goodbye England, Covered in Snow by Laura Marling. Laura Marling's first album, Alas I Cannot Swim, was nominated for the Mercury Prize. This track is the first to be taken from her second album, which hasn't been nominated for anything yet. Because it hasn't been released. Rebecca,
yes.
Tell us about this.
Surely it's only a matter of time.
Do you reckon?
I love Laura Marling. I really, really love her. And that album was one of my favourites of the year that it came out. So I guess that was that 2007, I think?
Maybe 2008 even.
Oh, maybe, yeah. But her voice is... There's just something really special about her voice. And I can never reconcile it with the fact that she's so young, because she sounds so world-weary and wise. And I like that this is a Christmas song and that there's a lot of potential for twee in it. I mean, she's talking about sort of snow and scarves and things like that, but actually what she does with it is makes it quite dark, and I think it ends up being a song about escape, and I just think it's lovely.
She's always been... The first album was quite a lot about escape, wasn't it? And about the melancholic elements of romance. So while she does kind of ballads and things, they've always had a little bit of a...
Yeah, definitely.
A dark kick.
But it's a bit grim for a Christmas song in a way. But I also think there's a note of hope in there. And there are a couple of kind of Christmassy chords. She doesn't over-egg it. It's not like, you know, there's no sleigh bells. I don't think there are any sleigh bells in it or anything like that. But I just think it's magical. I'm very excited to hear the new album.
I know some people, Laura Barton has heard the album, for example, being the folky title. She loves it to bits.
Yeah.
She thinks it's amazing. Rosie... Do you detect a kind of change in register in Laura Marling's voice at all?
Absolutely. I really do. I have to say, I didn't really like her the first time around. I found her really irritating because she is so young still. And I found, you know, everyone was going on about that song, New Romantic, and I just found the lyrics so self-regarding and pompous for someone so young. It's like listening to a 16-year-old say, you just, you know, the world just doesn't understand me.
But she didn't put that on her album, though.
No, she didn't.
I think maybe she felt perhaps the same about it.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's exactly it. If you wrote a song at that age, chances are less than 6 months later, you'd be like, oh, my God. And this, everything about her that I found quite difficult the first time around, I found her unnecessarily sort of bleak, isn't here. I think there's a lot more confidence in her vocals. And there's almost like a warmth to it that wasn't there before. And I just, now I find it far more appealing.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like something and I can't get my brain to register.
I'm not sure whether I'm wrong here, but I have, in my role as reader's recommender, I do have to listen to a lot of Joni Mitchell.
There sounds
very much more Joni in this than in the first album, and particularly in using a deeper register to then kind of offset against the higher
pace
range
of it.
Yeah.
Because people said that in the first album, and I didn't really hear Joni Mitchell on the first album.
No,
sort of, just because it's, you know, folk singer, but I hear it a lot more this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so what, we kind of split the difference there and say you converted now to Laura Marling.
Now, on this single, yeah, I like
you're
this
converted.
Single.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's two and a half out of three, I think, there for Laura Marling. And Goodbye England Covered in Snow is available to buy right now on Virgin Records. Next track is What Would I Want? Sky by Animal Collective. That was Animal Collective, What Would I Want? Sky. Animal Collective hail from Baltimore and therefore are friends with Stringer Bell. Indeed, they were to star in a proposed sixth season of The Wire, which was to lay bare the city's psychedelic dance music scene and its intricate links to the problems of urban regeneration. But then it didn't happen. Rosie,
yes.
They're the hipster's favourite, Animal Collective. You don't need telling that.
Well, that's kind of why I wanted to pick them, because I think, obviously, you know, everybody knows we're coming to the end of 2009, and Merriweather Post Pavilion was released at the very beginning of this year, and they went from being, you know, the sort of Pitchfork favourite, ever so slightly under the radar band, to having interviews in The Sun. And it was just such a weird period for them, and I don't know how they really reacted to it. They seemed to just completely keep their head down and not run with it too much and just tour. And they were playing these songs live when they were putting them together. I'm not exactly sure when this was recorded, because the EP from which this song is taken was recorded over 2008 and 2009. But when I heard it, I did think this was, you know, some sort of obvious step back from the likes of My Girls or Brother Sport, which had such huge choruses and it was just such brilliant pop songs. And this is not like that at all. It's like some of the stuff we've had on here loads by the likes of No Age, or it's very shoegazy, it doesn't really go in, it's not really a song. So it's not, is it? You know, it's not, it hasn't got a.
So why have you brought it here today?
Because I think I really like it, and I like what they're doing. I like that they're making a conscious effort not to.
But you think this is new, this is followed on from Merriweather Post Pavilion, you think, rather than something that they had recorded before?
Well, I don't know. I don't know which sequence it was on, but considering that this has come, this EP, this is the first song on an EP that's released after the biggest album of their career, and they've chosen to sort of take a step back from the big pop choruses, is, I mean, it's kind of always what they were going to do. They're never going to be as big as they probably could be if they carried on writing those pop hits. But I genuinely really like it, because I'm really into this kind of thing. But I think, you know, it's more of a, you know, you listen to this and you think Vampire Weekend's next album is out in January or February, and they've already said that one of the things they tried to do with that album was be more like Animal Collective, more try and have more of that myriad of sounds and weird stuff going on. So they've become super influential, and I don't even think they know how to deal with that.
Rebecca, what do you make of this? And do you have any opinions on basically we listened to the 30-second sample we listened to is like the first half of the song, and then it changes into something very different about 3 minutes in. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, maybe the first bit could have been a bit shorter. get to the tunes. Sounded like my dad then. Get to the tunes.
Did your dad actually say that? Get to the tunes?
My dad doesn't have an opinion about Animal Collective. But maybe I should get him. Let's get him on next time and he can, My dad likes the twang.
Does he?
Yeah.
Did I tell you about the time I met the guy who bought the twang for the United States of America?
No.
He decided to release the twang in the States.
How did that go down?
Not very well. So tell us about, it changes halfway through, doesn't it?
Yes, and then gets a bit more. The thing about Animal Collective is that I have to take them in small doses, so I can listen to a song at a time and enjoy the songs and think, this is very pleasant and I'm enjoying this oral sensation, I suppose.
But this is you. This is just you.
She was going there.
No, you. You have a dirty mind, Squash.
I shouldn't have looked. but I find them quite hard going. I know they're supposed to be very kind of pleasant, but I find them quite hard going all in one dose. So I listen to them one at a time.
But did you not find the second half of this? This is the point I'm trying to make. I found the second half of this a lot more, I could always use this word, but accessible, a lot more pleasant to listen to.
Yeah, definitely.
And instead of it sounding kind of Beach Boys referencing, which is the Merriweather stuff that sounds a lot like, it sounded like Wings. It sounded like they actually taken a sample of Paul McCartney and Wings track and kind of looped it around, which is also kind of unusual for them to use vocal samples,
it is a Grateful Dead sample.
Right.
But I'm not familiar with Grateful Dead.
That they've ever licensed anything for sampling as well, so it's a...
Well, there you go. You see, I mean,
indie facts today.
But that in itself is quite interesting, and I think, and it actually made for a much more interesting piece of music. I thought the first half of this was Animal Collective on autopilot. Mm. It is the sort of thing they've been making for all the obscure albums before Merriweather that were Pitchfork favourites had a lot of stuff like this on it. Whereas the second half, I thought, was a little bit newer. Anyway, so we all kind of like, we can take Animal Collective, but we prefer them in certain directions or in certain doses. I think that will be a little summary. And you can find What Would I Want? Sky on their MySpace now, but you can also buy the EP. Final track on Singles Club this week is Do They Know It's Christmas by Fucked Up. Throw your arms around the world. That was Fucked Up with Do They Know It's Christmas. That's me continuing the seasonal theme. Now, there's obviously something a little bit eye-catching about this track in the fact that it's a punk band who specialise in being dirty and crude, covering the most heart-wrenching, sincere track of all time, Do They Know It's Christmas. But there's something... there's something quite touching about it, I think. I love the list of collaborators. They've got everybody from Andrew WK to Yola Tengo and Ezra Koenig from Vampire Weekend and the Jizzer from the Wu-Tang Clan, who apparently recorded an hour's worth of material and they only used a minute of it. And in fact, I can't hear him anywhere on the track. So I love they've got this huge kind of alternative list of people. But actually, when you listen to the song, it is pretty much a faithful rendering, particularly vocally, of the original Band Aid track. I think they've got this indie comedian called David Cross, and he does the Bono bit, the real kind of, and tonight, thank God it's them instead of you, the real bombastic, pompous thing. And he really loves it. You know, there's no kind of, you know, they're obviously really enjoying themselves despite being such alternative sort. And it just goes to show what a robust track this is, that there's very little you can actually do to it. Rosie, you'll want to say something here.
Well, no, it's just when you said the bit about the David Cross, does he say Thank God it's us instead of Jews.
I think he does say that.
Obviously he can say that because he is Jewish. We might as well put that stipulation.
I didn't want to bring that up on a Guardian podcast.
Well, I was just really like, and then I didn't really know, what does that mean? What does that even mean?
It's just hilarious. It's just comedy. It's just comedy. Don't analyse the joke, otherwise it'll lose its humour.
Especially not Jewish humour. But I agree exactly with you. When I listened to it, it became obvious quite quickly that they weren't going to do anything radically different with it. And it just goes to show that if you change the you know, I'd never go back and listen to this song and I feel like, oh God, I've heard it so many times. But when you change the context of it and you have all these people involved and you're like, oh, let's see what they've done with it. You're right, it's such a durable pop song. It's so well written, as much as it annoys me to say that. Like, it's just so brilliantly written and perfect for its cause. And speaking of cool things, you can't get cooler than the charities that they were giving them to.
It's like Montreal Abused Women Charities.
Montreal Abused Women, and a charity to publicise the high disappearance rate of Aboriginal a woman in Canada.
Wow, First Nation.
Pretty niche.
Yeah, that is pretty niche, but also a very worthy cause.
Exactly.
Yes. I suppose one thing they've done is they've upped the tempo a little bit. So that mournful kind of dong tempo has gone a little bit. Rebecca.
Yes.
Any other positives to take away from this track?
Joss Stone's not on it.
Yes. Tick.
So that's good. Tick. And I think people should really, I don't know if they're releasing the physical, like
in February, apparently.
Oh, really?
Matador are doing limited 7 inches in February.
Well, people should wait until February and buy the 7-inch, because I don't think that the little box on iTunes does any justice to the cover art, which is Pink Eye's hairy nipple poking out of a Santa costume. That's not just it. There is more.
There's
on
a
the
starving
cover.
African child
that,
next to it.
Yeah, that was what I was drawn to. And I think that is, yeah, that's as festive as it gets.
Yeah,
so
you don't get none more festive than that. So three positive votes for Fucked Up, because it's all in a good cause. And you can download Do They Know It's Christmas on iTunes right now for just 79 pence. There was a bit of discussion on last week's thread regarding last week's tracks. Extraordinary Vamp had this to say on Clips. I think All Eyes on Me starts off really, really well, but it ends up being a barely above average tune. The album itself, I felt, was decent, but in the context of the utterly brilliant Hell Hath No Fury, was a bit of a letdown. Old blog favourite SV80 chipped in on the subject of these new Puritans. The first 2 minutes of We Want War is quite interesting. It reminds me of Galang by MIA more than anything else. The sinister synths and dubstep reggaeton elements really combine well. Falls apart when the vocals come in properly, though. Meanwhile, Citizen Kane chimed in just to say this: these new Puritans, too skinny and white. So we want your reviews of this week's tracks from Fucked Up, Animal Collective and Laura Marling on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Thank you very much, Rebecca Nicholson, for coming in and joining us today. It might be the last time we see you before Christmas.
I think it might be. Yep.
So, you know, I hope you're taking kind of lots of vitamins in the morning for all the booze you'll be quaffing in the evening.
I don't know where this has come from.
I don't know. I'm not letting anything slip from my lips here. It's all private. But yes, I hope you have a great time drinking, and then when you go home at Christmas, I hope you keep up the drinking.
I might try and wean my dad off the twang. Do you think that's an admirable Christmas ambition?
Well, thank you so much for coming
in. Yes, thanks for having me.
And secret tip-off, we'll be hearing a little bit more from you later on in the show. Okay, next on Music Weekly, we're going to go from this to this. That was Pacific State by 808 State, followed by The Don by Sisters with Transistors. There is a connection between both these acts. Rosie Swash, what is that connection?
That connection is Graham Massey. One part of 808 State, the Manchester acid house group, which Luke Bainbridge talked about quite recently on Feature with No Name, who since then has done quite a lot of interesting things, including working with Bjork before she was famous, which he talks about a little bit in this interview. But this is his most recent project. He's drumming for Sisters of Transistors, who they're a group who claim somewhat satirically, to be the UK's premier ladies combo organ quartet. Obviously, there aren't many combo organs.
There's not much competition there.
It obviously sounds a bit dubious, but their album at the Frantic Institute is really great stuff. And she heard a little bit there with the Don. So I wanted to hear more from Massey about where he fits into this so-called burgeoning combo organ scene.
It's a bit of a myth that there are any organ quartets really in the world. That's how we can claim to be the leading UK ladies organ quartet. So if anyone would like to challenge us, that would we'll be up for the challenge.
And how do you fit into the, if it's a ladies quartet, how do you fit into the equation?
I'm the drummer, so I'm at the back.
So if we're to take a lot of what Sisters of Transistors have said about themselves with a pinch of salt, where is the Ferranti Institute and the South Manchester Museum of Keyboard Technology? How does all this fit into the Sisters of Transistors?
Yeah, we've kind of made a context to play our music in, really. You know, there's quite a lot of fantasy involved in what we've written up and drawn a veil round. It's quite odd music. It's come about through collecting combo organs. And a combo organ isn't like a Hammond organ. It's a transistor organ that you might know from things like the Doors or the Spiral Carpets. It's that kind of sound is different to a Hammond organ. And they're like portable small organs. And I've been collecting them on eBay for a number of years. So we just thought we'd do a project involving that kind of sound. And once you put four of them together, it's quite an awesome sound when you play it loud through a PA system. So, we started writing music to display these vintage keyboards. And you just end up in strange territory with, you know, if you just use those instruments and you have to write music accordingly. And then we've kind of built up a story around it, really, you know, so just to give it a context. You know, a lot of people confuse it because it is quite clubby, that when they hear it in clubs, it still sticks out from the rest of sort of club music, and it gets reviewed alongside club music, and I think that's kind of wrong in a way. You know, we're just trying to do things with the instruments that we've got.
Is it right that the combo organ was the inspiration as opposed to the bands that you listed, like the Doors and Spiral Carpets, who use the combo organ?
Yeah, and I really like the sound of the organ. Like, organs come with a lot of baggage, really. You know, they've got kind of a bad reputation in music over the years for they're not a popular instrument, really, I wouldn't say, you know. But there are certain cases of that I really like in music. You know, for instance, the Miles Davis's 70s funk music that uses a lot of a Yamaha organ, that one of the ones we've got. And, occasionally I think it's a brilliant colour if you use it in the right context, but they're so often abused in terms of, people associate it with sort of circus music and all kinds of bad stuff. You know, so we're trying to readdress that.
And, many people will know you for your role in 808 State, and certainly still know 808 records that are being played, regularly, especially in the UK.
808 State were some of the first people through the gate of doing techno music in the UK, and which coincided really well with the emerging rave scene that, you know, it was just really good timing. So we just kind of rode a wave in, really. You know, we had a number of top 10 hits with some pretty abstract, strange electronic dance music. So. I think that's probably our biggest achievement, is the weirdest singles of all time.
And that period of music in which you're talking about has been fairly well sort of, I guess, mythologised to a certain degree in the media. Do you?
I believe that the big revolution in Manchester was around the clubs, and to a certain extent was hijacked by a lot of the bands at the time. Obviously, the bands like the Happy Mondays and the Stone Roses and the In Spiral Carpets were, you know, they were became very important bands, but it was very rare that you heard that music played in the clubs at the height of the Manchester scene. You know, you were much more hearing sort of the club music that our band and a guy called Gerald were playing, you know, down the Hacienda. But we just didn't fit into the mould for people like the Enemy. You know, they didn't really know how to handle a faceless corporate unit like us, you know. And we didn't know how to sell ourselves. We were just busy making records, and records was all that was important to us. You know.
Is there any other weird and wonderful instrument or bit of technology that you would like to explore in the way that Sisters of Transistors are doing?
Well, I play a lot of instruments, really, and I always have done. I've always, I'm more interested in noise than think of it as just that every instrument is just there to make noise, really. You know, I'm not a virtuoso on any particular instrument. But in the Sisters, I really wanted to play drums, and I managed to sort of get a drum set into my house under the pretext that my son was learning it. And once I'd established a drum kit in the house, I began to put some time into learning it. So for me, this is a new page in sort of, it's something I've always wanted to do, is be a drummer in a band. In order to do that, I've had to form a band around me. So I didn't have to audition or whatever, you know. So yeah, I'm quite happy sort of bashing away at the moment. It's very therapeutic.
That was Graham Matty, drummer for Sisters with Transistors, and their album At the Ferenti Institute is out now.
Thanks so much, Rosie. Okay, it wouldn't be our podcast without a feature which has no name, in which we look back on some of those artists that inspired us in years gone by. As hinted before, it's Rebecca Nicholson in the chair this week, and she's talking about a band called Heavens to Betsy.
Heavens to Betsy were a Riot Girls staple until they disbanded in 1994, after just 3 years of screaming, shouting and inadequate thrashing of their instruments. I was too young and too far away from their Olympia, Washington base to be aware of them when they were still around. For me, their appeal came later, when I was at Sixth Form College, swapping mixtapes with friends and strangers via mailing lists on fledgling dial-up internet connections. 10 years after that, they sound different again, almost unlistenable to a grown-up ear. Take Terrorist, call to arms for women who feel threatened by men who follow them down the street. Down the fucking street, no less. They were really angry. Blasting this abrasive noise through Walkman headphones made me feel invincible when I was 16. Now, I'm slightly sheepish about it. But the two members of Heavens to Betsy, Corin Tucker and Tracy Sawyer, weren't much older than that themselves, and their one album, Calculated, from 1993, is seething with naive, very teenage kind of rage. They sing, scream about cheerleaders and quarterbacks, stabbing boys, being called fat, periods and rubbish Saturday jobs. It's my so-called life via the medium of shambolic punk rock, only it's Angela, not Jordan Catalano, who gets to sling on the guitar. I don't know what what happened to Tracy Sawyer, but Corin Tucker went on to form Sleater-Kinney, one of my all-time favourite bands, who split up themselves in 2006 after releasing the monstrously heavy album The Woods. What she kept from her Heavens to Betsy days was that peculiar vocal style, honed in later years, but still part shriek, part warble, and part operatic holler. It divided indie rock fans in the same way that Wild Beasts do today. Thankfully, she left the teenage angst behind. After all, the prospect of an adult pretending to still feel the pain of high school life never works out. Just look at what happened to Dawson's Creek.
That was Rebecca Nicholson on Riot Girl Act, Heavens to Betsy, and that is the last feature with no name of 2009. Can you believe it? And I'm afraid that's also it for this week's show. Rosie, great, great, wasn't it?
Really great.
Really,
yeah.
Really great. Apart from all the lewdness, actually.
Listen, you're the one that said a word that sounds like vagina 700 times.
Yeah, exactly. You've got all the cover you need there. We'll be back next week with a very special show, looking back over the decade just about gone, the noughties, that is. And that'll be out on Friday. But until then, see ya.